I don't have dad to teach me, and I don't have mom to comfort me. I have not been honest with you. I have not been myself with you. These are my hunting partners. I've gone on adventures with them now for years, and they have not experienced the fullness of who I am because I am holding back.
Friends, welcome back to another episode of the Become Good Soil podcast. It's an invitation to walk together as a global community of like-hearted men consenting to a God-bathed, God-breathed, and God-led masculine initiation. Let's dive deep together.
Yeah, let's go for it. As I was thinking, Morgan, about my masculine journey and taking advantage of this conversation for, and your experience and your walk with God, my heart went with asking you for your frontier. It's easy to go back and to maybe share victories and struggles and things that are in the past, but I am curious about what your frontier in the masculine journey is these days. Where are you finding God wanting to move you out of your comfort zone into areas where you don't have mastery and where he wants to initiate you and father you? Where are you?
Yeah, Pablo, I think, you know, this is all just a risk, right? To put our stories out there in the interior life, in the unfinished. So I just name that. But it's an honor to do so because of what we're after. You know, Pablo, for most of my life, there was a huge battle with anxiety. And I couldn't even have named it for a lot of years. I didn't understand how anxiety works. It was the water I swam in. It was a generational curse. It was lifestyle. It was woundedness. And it really caused a train wreck. But I would say about a year and a half ago, I did some deep trauma work, and I had gone after it for quite some time, but I did some deep work and God healed through some deep restorative trauma therapy with some friends, that lifetime battle with anxiety. And it's been like 99% free. It just blows my mind, the level of healing. As John says, it's little by little and all at once. Yeah. So I can say now, having fought through some real challenging circumstances and similar circumstances, like that's gone. There is currently a battle with overwhelmed. And that's been ongoing, and I've gotten very little purchase. I've gotten very little momentum towards healing, replacing overwhelmed with peace. And even as I say it out loud, I feel shame because I think fierce mastery, like, just get your shit together. Like, it's a simple equation is like where I go. But the truth is, for a very set of complex realities, some of which I don't understand, I really fight a battle with overwhelmed. It's where the enemy really accuses me. And it's a place that's very grafted into my story. And so I've been going pretty relentlessly after, Holy Spirit, how do you want to shepherd my path to replace peace? Mm-hmm. Or I should say replace overwhelmed with an experience of peace that's beyond circumstances. And I think, to be specific in this moment, to talk about my frontier, because it has to be operational. It has to be in our everyday life. And so I did a podcast series with Chuck Bolton that you will remember. And in it, Chuck Bolton deals with people with high addiction and really dramatic environments. He's trying to rescue hearts. And he is the go-to phone number for a lot of people in addiction recovery and like life and death, suicide issues. And so I asked him, like, how do you deal with it? Like, if any man should be overwhelmed, mm-hmm. where your crisis becomes my crisis, like, he should be the guy. And he described this kind of relational kingdom. I'd say it. I would name it as the integrity of a relational kingdom, where if you picture like a donut, there's the inside ring, the outside ring. And picture a three ringed kind of concentric circles, and it's hard to do it without an illustration. But he described a relational model where he says his goal is to be authentic with everybody, transparent with a few, and intimate with fewer still.
Wow.
And I saw that model and I went, oh, that's very different than how I operate. I operate with this sense of I need to be true. Mm-hmm. And it's a real forcefulness and a posture of just really lacking compassion for myself. And I need to be true in all situations. And what that ends up with is too much intimacy. Yeah. So I have too broad of a relational circle. And in that circle, I'm trying to be intimate with too many, transparent with too many. And so it's overwhelming. And what God has showed me over the years, I have pretty relentlessly pruned my kingdom. And even relationally, I follow Jesus's leadership, followed his lead, his counsel, where he says, the branches that don't bear fruit, lop them off. The branches that do bear fruit, prune them so they bear even more fruit. And so I would say that my relational kingdom has shrunk in some degrees. But what I've noticed with this battle, this frontier of overwhelmed, if I look at those three concentric circles within it, if I'm trying to maintain authenticity with everybody, the circle of people within that, in my kind of realm entrusted to my care of transparency, is very wide.
Yes.
I end up being transparent with an extraordinary amount of people, far too many.
Yeah.
And then my circle of intimacy is still too wide. It's not as wide as the transparency, but it's still too broad. The consequence is I end up diffusing the resources of my soul and really opening myself up in all sorts of dimensions that are simply unhealthy and unhelpful. It's not a relationally integrous model because I'm only one human. I'm one person. And our limitations are actually some of our greatest teachers. And so for my frontier, what I've been doing is drawing those circles and asking Jesus to illuminate, where am I offering transparency when it needs to be authentic, but it's far too much?
Yes.
And where am I offering intimacy that's actually not in alignment with what God has and the what's below it, what's behind it, what causes me to do that? And so as I say it out loud, it's vulnerable, it's frontier. I just know that I have been ashamed of my overwhelmed. I've managed for overwhelmed. I've disciplined my way out of overwhelmed, but I'm at the core. Where now it's really time, the only thing left is healing of my masculine soul and tuning in to God shepherding me through some impossible possible to bring integrity back to what I would name as my relational kingdom.
That is pretty deep waters right away. And I have a question that comes to mind, Morgan. As you think about being transparent or intimate outside of the circle, the concentric circle that God is giving you in relationship with those two, transparent and or intimate, what does it feel for you to not be? What is your internal reaction, your heart's reaction to you putting restraints to the how wide that circle is in your life?
Well,
is there a risk? Does it feel like death in your terms?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So maybe I'll flip the question the other way. What does it feel like when I lack integrity there? And so, like, let me get there first, because I feel like a whore. I end up walking away feeling like I just gave away a treasure,
yes,
of my essence.
Yes.
It wasn't intended for that person or that thing, that it wasn't an act of intimacy, but it was in the wrong context. And so the alternative to not offer in my false self, I would say it feels like withholding, but it's more than that. it feels like disingenuousness. Like it feels like something of lacking honesty, faking it, or hiding, when in fact it's an effort to guard my heart.
Yep.
I'm actually more comfortable abusing my heart and treating my heart like a prostitute than I am comfortable guarding my heart.
I hear you.
And it's just fascinating what that's like. So I'm at an initiation event last night. I've been sick and I healed enough that I could go. And it was beautiful for a young 16-year-old man. And it formally wrapped up. We'd been there for 4 hours. And I knew what I needed was to eject. Mm-hmm. But what I was pulled to do was engage with everyone there, some of whom I have a close relationship, others of whom I have no relationship. But it felt like to be kind, to be appropriate, to be present.
Yes.
To steward that specific space, love would look like staying and engaging. The truth is, to steward my kingdom, it's to say it's Sunday night. I've received very little Sabbath. I've poured myself out. I'm sick. I need to protect my resources. My family needs me. I need to unapologetically eject.
Yes.
And so a boundary of authenticity would have been just to walk away. And what I notice, Pablo, is how I typically operate is I stay and offer transparency and even intimacy. And then I resent myself and those people on the drive home. Mm-hmm. I feel like a victim and I resent the offering, but it was my choice. And so I think to get to your question, I don't really know how to name it, but that's my internal experience.
Yep. And I totally see it. It feels to me related to you. I need to come through for people and that's mm-hmm. how I make life work, right? That's if I have been on the receiving end of your mentoring and your example in Kingdom Ways for many years now, and so you have come through for me, whether you were trying to or not, right? At a weekend retreat where I'm attending or at different contexts, and even in a conversation like this, I am being enriched by our conversation. And I wonder how the enemy is taking your good heart and your good intention and your calling and your God-given glory, which is to bring a portion of the kingdom on behalf of people. You see the effect of that, but would you be willing, could you do like Jesus did and say, no, I'm going to be alone with my father. I'm going to the desert. And right, I will not be coming through for people. And the way you come through for people is by offering intimacy, transparency, vulnerability, the depths of your heart. That's how you have done it.
Yes. Well, okay. So you're naming something important, right? That's how coming through has correlated most of the time with offering the depths of who I am.
Yes.
Right? That's where I've made those things synonymous. That's not necessarily true. That's not how Jesus operates, right? He has this brilliant, mature, redemptive nature of being able to move against, move towards, and move away. And he is elusive. I mean, he is constantly vanishing. I've been immersing myself in the four gospels and I'm blown away, Pablo, at how often he disappears, how often he doesn't come through. Of course, there are times he does, but what strikes me is all the times he doesn't have a normal mode of operating that's his default mechanism. And so to your point, like last night, it's all practice. It's all practice. So I said to my soul, you're okay. Just practice leaving. And so I just bailed. I didn't say goodbye to anyone. We were at a campfire. It was dark and I just vanished. And I got in my truck and I'm driving away. And that it honestly felt uncomfortable because I'm not practiced in the move away as a form of love. But as I was driving in the truck, releasing the event, I could feel like getting some of my integrity back.
Yeah.
And I could feel this blessing towards the event and towards the men rather than resentment. But it was such in masculine initiation, there is nothing like that present moment to plunge into the smallest risk, right? It's like, it's in the everyday fabric. It's just that choice of I'm going to practice leaving. Yeah. And for most people, they probably wouldn't have thought I bailed. Other people were leaving. I'm just used to being the last guy. And so I have such a bias towards that. And so I really appreciate you pointing that out, because you've seen that come through for me. And what if come through in love does not always look like deep heart intimacy, that it actually sometimes looks like walking away or moving against. And that's where I'm unpracticed. And that's a frontier.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So let me flip it back to you.
Yes.
Like you said, like the people hear our victory stories and they make that the major theme, mm-hmm. because we always tell a story in ourselves about other people. Mm-hmm. What they don't know of how much we're living in the not yet, in the unfinished, in the frontier. Yeah. So for you, just something fresh, yeah, masculine initiation, what's frontier?
Yeah, there are two words that come to mind, and I'll unpack them both. One is unprepared, and the second one is it sounds literally is not what it means, homelessness. Not physical homelessness, but spiritual homelessness. And maybe to unpack both, I have to go back to a story of about 2 weeks ago, September in Colorado, so I'm hunting. And this time we had a beautiful team of four men going up into the South San Juan Mountains, deep into the woods. It was a long hike in to try to get away from the crowds. It was a mole, more people than animals, any kind of animal. And so anyway, we ended up pushing farther out. And what Jesus had for us was not elk, obviously. Right? There's a bigger story. What he had was a big portion of our hearts for each of the men who came. He came beautifully to heal big and deep places in our hearts. And for me, it started with going on a trail before sunrise. We're going to our hunting location. So we're moving quickly because we're on mission. And then one of my friends stopped and he turned around and he said, I want to destroy something. And he teared up. And really quickly, I knew, all right, we need to go after his heart. This is not about elk this morning. There is a bigger story here. And just we went after it. And it was absolutely beautiful. Jesus came for him, a deep story of wounding that was healed. And he received the love of the Father. And we cried together as we watched the sunrise. And glorious, incredible. And I could feel my own heart and almost the words from my Father saying, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. Well done, Pablo. Way to go offering your strength, yes, and fighting for this man's heart. It was great. All of us participated of that. And then we said, all right, let's keep going. It's a little later, but let's see what Jesus has today. And we went on and we hunted for the next few hours. We finally set up a temporary camp somewhere, hang our hammocks, and we took a nap. And it was great. And I woke up before my friends, and I sensed this uneasiness in my heart. And before I fully woke up, I found myself asking Jesus, what about me? Is there something that you want to address in my heart right now? And he said, why are you holding back? And right there, I saw the contrast between the man who intervened for his friend early in the morning and how I offered my strength in love on his behalf. I didn't hold back whatsoever. I went with my full strength. But after that, when we were now hunting, I noticed places where I was holding back and relying on my friend's strengths to do what we were needing, what we needed to do. Moments where I had an opinion of what we needed to do and I stayed quiet. Moments where I was offered the invitation to go and risk. And instead I passed and I said, you go ahead. You do the setup. You be the shooter. I'll call for you. Moments like that, that looked like acts of love on behalf of my friends, but they were really rooted in fear or in shame. And I could not put pinpoint exactly what was happening. And so there, my friends are snoring and farting on their hammocks. And I began to tear up and feel super young. And what is this about Jesus? And then he took me to a story of when I was young and I was at a ranch with my cousin who lived in the ranch, who was an expert in all things wilderness. And that's the place that my grandfather loved, the place that my dad loved, the place that I loved and I longed to be a part of, but always felt unprepared. So I would be shipped in the summer to be with my cousin there without my dad, because he was not around. We would go on adventures that he was an expert at and where I felt completely unprepared. And one of them were racing on horses, on horseback. And I fell from my horse. My cousin was ahead of me and he disappeared. And I didn't know where we were. So all I could do, I must have been 12, 13 years old, was I sat next to a tree and I waited for what it felt like hours until my cousin finally came back with like, "What happened, buddy?" I fell. And he was like, "Come on, man, get your act together." So shame, I don't have what it takes. But during that time, I remember now heading back to the house at the ranch, and it was sunset, and feeling lonely and abandoned and misunderstood. And that was when that word unprepared entered at that level. I was afraid of bringing who I was in the moment to share whatever my condition, the internal condition of my heart or my capacity to do something with my cousin, because it's going to lead to shame. It's going to lead to mockery, to misunderstanding. And I don't have that to teach me. And I don't have mom to comfort me. And so all of this is happening while my body starts snoring and doing their thing. And finally they woke up and I'm in tears. So they're asking, "Are you okay? What's going on? What's got after?" And I had to tell them, "I am sorry, guys. I have not been honest with you. I have not been myself with you. These are my hunting partners. I've gone on adventures with them now for years. And they have not experienced the fullness of who I am because I am holding back."
Yes.
"Because I'm afraid that if my true self comes out, they're going to mock me like my cousin mocked me, like friends mocked me in different circumstances as a result of my lack of initiation when I was a young boy." And so it was a different angle. God has healed wounds in my heart around lack of fathering. And I more and more by the day, I'm living more and more as a son. And my father is inviting me on this constant journey of initiation. But there was a big wound that came through my friends mocking me as a result of that word. I am unprepared. So I came back from the hunt. Well, that day, by the way, I just told them, "I'm sorry for what I'm going to say, but I need permission to fail." And that just broke a big well within my heart. I have never been given permission to fail. Failure has meant mockery, humiliation, singling out, pointing fingers. And failure is the way we learn. I try to tell that to my sons as much as I can when they, you know, fall from the skateboard. "Oh, I'm really dumb at this." "You're not dumb, buddy. You're amazing. You just haven't learned yet. And the way you learn is by practicing and failing. And then you're going to fail less and less. And you're going to risk more and fail in the new risks." But for me, failure is an unforgivable sin. If I fail, that means death. Mm. So I told them, "I just need to take risks with you guys today. Let me take point. Let me lead the way in these ways. And please know that I am going to fail. So please don't mock me. Please," right? And half of that is joking, but they got it. And so we had a beautiful, unsuccessful hunt that gave me way bigger treasures than an elk could have been for my heart, for my soul, and for my story of initiation. Now I came back from the hunt and my wife tells me, "I think God has more for you. I think you need to go back into the back country."
That's a beautiful wife right there.
I'm like, "Who are you?" And she said, "Yes, I've been praying. And I thought that you were going to send me a text telling me that you needed to stay for a few more days. And Jesus was preparing me for that. Instead, you came a day earlier. I think God has treasure for you. Go." And so I called one of the guys and I said, "Hey, I'm sensing this from Jesus." He was supposed to go on a muzzle loader hunt the following week. by himself. He was doubting going. And long story short, my offering meant he could go on his hunt. So we went back into the backcountry, same location, deeper into the wild. And the first evening, we walked like 9 miles to get to base camp. It was a long hike. And the sun is setting. It's the most beautiful landscape. And instead, I'm feeling depression, weariness, tiredness.
This is on the second hunt.
On the second hunt. And I'm feeling this weariness from the hiking. I'm tired. And I went to grab some water from the creek to filter, and I'm watching the sunset, and I just want to cry, and I don't know why. I'm feeling lonely. And so this is now only two of us, and my body is actually taking care of a bunch of other things, so he's not with me. Had we been the four of us again, we would have been messing around with each other, cracking up, setting the fire, doing the thing, the man thing. But instead, I find myself in the wilderness alone again.
Yeah.
And so, and I noticed Jesus wants to go take a deeper cut at this, and back to that ranch, back in that moment of loneliness, back in that moment when I was 12 or 13 in the sun is setting in that ranch, and mom is not around, and dad is obviously not around in my story. And instead of trying to fill that void with something, which is what I typically do, I said, I don't want to be here. Jesus, I want to be home with my wife. I want to be cuddling with her in bed, having a drink, watching some stupid show and laughing with her, making love, something. Ah, it's comfort, it's nourishment. What I need is home, home. And that I felt the tears. I have heard you say how the invitation of the gospel is to be reparented.
Yes.
The words that Jesus is giving me recently is it's a homecoming. It is, you have been lost, that has been a plague with religion, lost and now you're found. You have been living as an exile, but you are welcome to live home. Welcome home, son. And so in that place, not having too much more to pray or to do, I said, Jesus, I need comfort. I need safety. I need a hug and a warm blanket and hot cocoa, and you telling me that it's going to be all right. And tears are flowing again. And it took me a good half hour just sitting on a rock by that creek. And would you mother me? And you're fathering me. And I know that this trip is part of my initiation, and you're initiating me here in the wild. But I need mom. I love my earthly mom. But in her, I found more battle partner.
Yeah.
Because of her story and our story and the way that I grew up, where danger was present. But I never had the place where if I run to her, I'll be safe. Everything is going to be okay. There is provision, there is protection, there is nourishment, there is comfort, there is here's the band-aid and you're going to be okay, son, and the kiss in the forehead. I don't have that category. That is complete. That's nothingness for me. And so without too many words, I said, Jesus, I need you to mother me now. Would you comfort me? Would you be the one kissing me in the forehead? Would you put a band-aid on my scraped knee? Would you tell me that everything is going to be okay? And I close my eyes and I stay there for a few minutes, trying to not avoid the pain, but dive into it with my mom, with my God mom, if you will. And something big was healed. Something huge was healed. That was the beginning. The whole hunt, that second leg of the hunt was about that, about coming back home and home in the wilderness, which was beautiful. It was part of what was my spiritual inheritance.
Yes.
As a man, but also from my family. My family loved the wild, and I was being restored by God into the place where I belong. With dad, with mom, and with my older brother, Jesus. And they were there around me. I was home at the kitchen table. Mm-hmm. I was there in the couch with a blanket with my mom for a moment. And that night it rained like crazy, which sabotaged them. The next morning it was pouring down, no way to get out of the tent. And so with my buddy and I, what do we do? Well, he says, what do you have? And I just started, I went, got inside my sleeping bag at 7:30 in the morning, wasting the hunting time and snuggled with mom in my sleeping bag. I snuggled with mom and cried because I have 45 years of not having that. And so I want to learn what living at home, from home, looks like. I got a taste and I'm beginning to ask, how can I put that into practice here on a Tuesday at 9 o'clock, on a Wednesday at 3 p.m.? How can I live from home? And I just sense the little buds coming, sprouting from the earth, but it's completely new territory, completely frontier. That's where I am. A bit longer of a story, but I think it was needed to bring context to what I'm experiencing with Jesus.
Pablo, there's so many nuances and kind of kingdom threads woven into that story of battle, adventure, and restoration, initiation. There's just so many nuances that it just reminds me that story is the language of the heart, because there's so much you're naming that's not didactic, it's not bullet points, but it's hidden in the parable. I think, you know, one of the things that strikes me just in observation is so much of that took place because you and Juanita have become the kind of people that have a leaning in posture in your life with God. It's not we study God. It's not that we have a relationship with God as though it was like a fixed transaction, but there's an intimacy, there's a curiosity, there's a bend towards God. I trust you beyond my understanding. I need to hear from you. I need to be led by you. I'm struck by that moment in your first hunt in the hammock where that could have been filled and you could have missed the treasure, right? Like it could have been filled with listening to podcasts on your earbuds, reading a book. It could have been filled with content. It could have been filled with busyness. It could have been filled with worry. But instead, you created a soul safe space to just be in the quiet discomfort of alone. Lonely, but not alone. That's the way I'd say it. And then Juanita at home, taking care of two little boys, the busyness, like nothing slows down. When we go out in the wild, it only gets harder for our wives, but her consecrated life, deeper than her felt needs of what she is expecting from a husband, she's listening to God for your story. And so there's this tuning in, God, what do you have for my husband? And it's so counterintuitive to think that she would bless you going away a second time. It really strikes me. But the other piece I want to just highlight, this idea of home, you know, it's been something on both of our frontiers that what if central to the invitation of the gospel is a homecoming? What if it's a returning home? That what if this longing for home in our soul is actually the center kind of cry to restore what's been lost and to receive what's available from God and his kingdom? I love that verse in the Gospel of John, where John says of Jesus, knowing Jesus came from the Father, knowing he's returning to the Father, he turned to his disciples, his apprentices, and he did the unthinkable. He did the impossible possible. You know, and in that culture, it was washing the feet. It's inconceivable for a Jewish rabbi to wash the feet of his apprentices. In this revelation, I know where I'm from. Mm-hmm. I know where I'm going. I'm not yet there today. But my orientation is towards a mother, a father, and a family. It's fascinating to me, Pablo, to hear in your story that relationship between finding yourself holding back, finding yourself unprepared, finding yourself very sophisticated, finding yourself in very sophisticated means, doing what looks like love towards other people, but actually is self-protection and fear, that's directly related to the restoration of family and the gospel as family. It is risky to open our hearts up to what you named. Where was dad to teach me and train me? And where was mom to comfort me?
Yes.
Every one of us has a story of the enemy trying to hinder those forces of good and those forces of emotional well-being and spiritual nourishment. And wherever we are, I do believe that God is bringing back an on-ramp to say, I am the epicenter of all things father and mother, but will you let me love you?
Yes.
Will you let me comfort you? And for a man, this is like deep waters, but for a man to open his heart to sources of comfort and nourishment that are good, true, and beautiful is actually a place of filling a reservoir that flows out as courage, sacrifice, heroism, and masculine strength. And it feels like a paradox because you might think it's like feminine or wimpy. I don't know how to say it, but in fact, it's intended to be the fuel for us to be fully masculine without living in a masculine caricature, which is what the world sees, and then it condemns masculinity. So I'm just so proud of your courage to engage, and that's deep waters.
It is deep waters. Just adding to what you're mentioning, for me, even acknowledging that my soul has those needs, those motherly needs, if you will, the comfort, the nourishment, the embrace and the band-aid and the kiss on the forehead, there is an aspect of shame that I'm still peeling through. There is a part of me that feels that I shouldn't have those needs, that I'm a warrior and I need to come and stand up and fight for people and come through and do my job and accomplish, and more discipline and more striving will push through that, because that is not masculine, when in fact, I think it is at the root of who we are as men. And when I see it in my sons, they go and they scrape their knees and they come to mom, and mom gives them what their soul needs at that time.
Yes.
Boy that comes back onto the playing field, who grabs the skateboard again and goes and risks, it's filled with something that the world needs, and his strength, his masculine strength, can come as a result of his heart having been comforted and loved in the way that mom does it for them. I want that. I do want that for me.
And so in solidarity with you, Pablo, as another hard charger that can often be unkind to my own soul, I want to share just equally, just in the spirit of what's our frontier. So last night at this initiation event, John was there, and he actually was speaking words into this young man who was 16, and he was saying that the mark of a true man, a wholehearted man, a warrior, is that he can treat his own heart with compassion. And it's from the words of Paul where he says, clothe yourself with compassion.
Yes.
Have compassion. And I was sitting there, and I was deeply moved and convicted, where I realized, if I'm honest, I treat myself with very little compassion. I am slow to offer compassion to my own heart. And as we know, the way we treat our own hearts is inevitably how we treat others. We may say different things with our words, but from our essence, we only offer what we've received. And I drove out of last night, and I'm reflecting on it as you're sharing, that it takes a impossible courage. In other words, a supernatural courage to say, would I receive compassion for myself to the measure that God is offering compassion towards me? And it's easier to be hard on myself.
Yes.
But I think that if we can appreciate that an on-ramp to receiving feminine love, an on-ramp to restoring this intimacy of God as Father and God as Mother is simply the practice of compassion towards our own heart.
Brothers, we are in deep waters, waters of hope and waters of possibility. And it's right here that I want to invite you to pause. I want to invite us to consider one big idea as we transition to a close for this episode. It's been said that one of the most fundamental marks of a wholehearted man and a true warrior is that he is able to treat his own heart with compassion. In many ways, it's one of the most difficult activities of the masculine soul to treat our own hearts with compassion. And what if this is true? And what if God is inviting us to practice a bit of compassion towards our own heart right here and right now? And so what I want to invite you to do is join me in 90 seconds to simply be with our Father, to receive compassion, to give permission to receive compassion in this place. Let's take 90 seconds, and then I look forward to joining you for part 3 of Field Notes with Pablo Cerrone.